Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I am your host, Jake Skorheim. Thank you guys so much for choosing to spend your time with us. If you missed the first 2 hours of the show, boy, did you make a mistake. There's a lot of good stuff out there. You don't want to miss it. And so, I actually have a solution for you. You're going to love this solution. I hope. I don't know. You might not like it, but I hope you do. Go download the podcast, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. That means you can listen to me in crystal clear HD anytime you want. Put me right in your pocket. I'm just your buddy, ready to go. In a non-pervy way, it's lots of fun. Stupid. No, but really, we post a lot of stuff there. So, if you want to check it out, please be my guest. It doesn't cost you anything. There's really no risk. People say that term all the time, risk versus reward. This is just reward when you download the podcast. Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. Get it on Spotify. Get it on Apple. Anywhere you want it. You can check it out. All right. We got a lot of stuff to get to, so let's get it. I was really excited about this story when I saw it earlier in the week. And so, but I realized that maybe I had actually been tricked. So I'm going to tell you the story and then I'm going to tell you why I realized that maybe we're all just being tricked. Listen to this. Are we living in the future? No, not like a simulation and we're not part of a computer. I just mean the things that they're doing now technologically with city government stuff, specifically drones that will be used to combat graffiti. After this new bill has been signed by Governor Jay Inslee, this story is on MyNorthwest.com. You guys can check it out there. It's really interesting. I don't think it's going to work. And I'm going to explain to you in just a minute why I don't think it's going to work. And the reason it's not going to work, I don't think, is because we have to know our history. And if you know your history, you're not doomed to repeat it, which is, I think, a thing that people say. But listen to this. First, the drones. State transportation officials have been authorized to use drones to address graffiti vandalism after Washington Governor Jay Inslee signed House Bill. Well, you don't care about the House Bill. But this is interesting, right? This idea of using drones to spray off the graffiti on the sides of overpasses, things like that. With the passage of this bill, a pilot program will now allow the Washington State Department of Transportation, or WashDOT for short, to operate spray drone technology to cover up existing graffiti. Two guys can sit in the truck, operate the drone, and paint over it so that they can keep after it quicker and get it covered faster and less expensive. That is Representative Andrew Barkus, a Republican from Olympia. He spoke to Cairo News Radio. That's us. He says the explosion of graffiti in our state has become a serious concern that demands an immediate and comprehensive response. He's not wrong. I'm going to step outside the article here for just a second. This is Jake's commenting here. This is me. He's absolutely right. If you guys have driven downtown anytime in the last 5 years, it has gotten really, really bad. Like in the last 2-3 years, it's gotten unbelievably bad. Every single surface of the overpasses, the sideways, the noise barriers, all the stuff around the roads covered in graffiti. And as you drive down there, and thankfully, they have also started now to clear some of these areas of these homeless encampments that were just popping up and were everywhere, it seemed. But they have started clearing some of those, which is great. I'm glad they are clearing some of those. They needed to. It's dangerous. I'm a person who firmly believes that we can have compassion and we can also hold people to high standards. Because I don't think that we should be allowing human beings to live outside like animals. I don't think we should be doing that. I don't know why we put up with it. I don't know why that became a thing in Seattle. It's why I moved out of Seattle with my family. It's why we decided we didn't want to live here. And why many of you, my smart listeners, have also decided you would rather live in other counties, not in King County. And we have a lot of King County listeners, but we have a lot of people who do not live in downtown Seattle because I think you guys are really smart. That's why. And for the ones who do live in downtown Seattle, you are smart. But you also live in the city, so I don't know what that says about you. But you're, I guess you can be two things at once. back to drones. Let's get back to drones for a second. Representative Andrew Barkus, Republican Olympia, he says, this bill acknowledges the frustration Washingtonians feel about graffiti on our roadways and sends a clear message that enough is enough. We cannot continue to allow the actions of a few to shape the narrative of our communities. He is 100% right there. You are going down there. You're watching. You're just like, you're suddenly, it's like Biff World. Do you remember in Back to the Future where Marty McFly accidentally leaves the sports almanac in the back of the DeLorean, and then old man Biff finds the DeLorean parked behind something. He finds the sports almanac. He puts two and two together, and he realizes that Marty is time traveling, and he thinks to himself, oh, hey, I got a good idea. I don't know why I'm describing to you the plot of Back to the Future 2, but this is what it is. I'll just finish it up here since I already started. I'm gone down this road. Let's get to the end. We'll circle back, and we'll come back to drones. So old Biff, he jumps into the DeLorean. He figures out somehow, I don't know how he figures out, but he somehow figures out how to fly back to 1955 with the sports almanac. He gives the sports almanac to young Biff. Young Biff then uses the sports almanac to place bets on every single sporting event between 1955 and whenever it ends. Makes a ton of money so that by the time that Marty McFly goes back to his current reality, which is sometime in 1980s, I think it's 1985, he goes back to 1985. Suddenly he realizes, oh my gosh, there has been a butterfly effect change. Now 1985 doesn't look like the one that I left. It now looks like a dystopian future where things are really bad because Biff is now leading everything. He's controlling everything. In some ways, I'm not saying this is exactly what happened in Seattle, but like I remember Seattle as a kid being very different than Seattle is now. And also I remember Seattle in my 20s. When I lived in Seattle as a 20-something year old, just a young, peppy guy, excited about life, going around, trying to date my wife, going on dates, seeing the city, trying to be out and about in the city. It did not have the issues that Seattle has now. It has changed drastically in the last 10 or so years. Graffiti is just one of them. Graffiti is like just one of the things that we can see on the outside that lets us know something is deeply wrong in the city of Seattle. But graffiti's a big deal, so we'll stick with graffiti. Anyway, let's get back to graffiti, and let's get back to graffiti drones and why I don't think they're going to work. This is just a pilot program. This is not guaranteed to work. They're trying this. They said we are spending over $1 million a year to deal with this current problem, and it doesn't seem like it's being dealt with. Again, this is Andrew Barkus. He's saying, so if we can find a cost measure to do it more effectively and get it done, I'd love to see it. That's great. I totally agree with him. If we can save money, if we can get it clean, that would be great. So the department is going to spend a bunch of money to see if they can make this the new normal and see if this works. The problem with this is, one, I don't know how this is going to work. And I'm not speaking about this as somebody who has no experience using these drones. I've actually used these drones. Like my kids and I have some RC drones because they're super cool and they're fun. And this is just like a really neat technology to fly. And like you can make the drones do all the things. They can flip upside down. They're really loud and they're fun. I have three little boys. So like they love RC anything. We do a lot of RC cars at the house. We fly a lot of RC planes. Drones. We've got like, I don't know how many drones do we have. We probably have four different drones. We even have a really fancy one. I didn't buy it. My father-in-law bought it, but it's a really fancy drone that has like a pair of goggles that I can hook up to and I can look out the drone. I can have the point of view of the drone on this little like 4K camera that the drone has, and you can fly it around, and it's very disorienting actually if you're flying it, because it's just like, it makes you feel seasick. The kids don't seem to have an issue with it, but I get sick watching it. But you put the screen over your eyes and you can fly. I mean, you guys know what this is. You've seen this technology. So these drones fly now, but I don't know how they're going to carry paint. I have no idea how they're going to carry this paint. I think it's going to be tough to do. Tough to carry enough paint so that it actually makes a difference. I guess there's like different weights of paint, and I guess it's just going to be a lighter paint that they're going to be spraying on. But I don't know how they're going to do it. So this is interesting though. And this is why I think I'm not optimistic that this is going to work. I'm rightfully pessimistic that this is going to work. And the reason I'm pessimistic, I had to go all the way back to 2008 because I remembered something. I said, didn't the city one time adopt a futuristic kind of technology? Didn't Seattle try to do this before? Not with drones and not with paint, but didn't they before try to say, hey, isn't there a technological way to deal with something that people don't want to have to clean themselves? And isn't it, can't we like just get technology to do this for us? And what if we put some money into it and it would change the way that we do something in the city that was currently a problem? And of course, I'm speaking about bathrooms. If anybody who's lived here for a long time, they might remember this. This is a hilarious story. So I hope that you guys are still listening and I hope you care enough about this because this is very funny. But to tell the story effectively, we got to go all the way back to 2008, my first year working as a producer for the Dory Monson Show. And I can tell you, Dory made hay with this story because it's hilarious and it just perfectly is a perfect example of how the city can just figure out a way to waste money. And so I'm going to tell you that story in just a second. But again, we got to go back to 2008.
Wait a minute, Doc. Car, are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
All right, so imagine we just jumped in the DeLorean, which is another reference from, we were just talking about the DeLorean a second ago. I didn't plan that. That's just like, it happened. That just worked out. It's a happy coincidence. I think they call that serendipity. So we are now back in 2008. This is the Seattle Times headline. Listen to this. Seattle's $5 million automated public toilets have finally sold on eBay. I will get to the price that they sold for in just a second. But if, in case you weren't living in Seattle at the time or you don't remember this, Dory did a fantastic job telling this story. And it was so wonderful when this story popped up because it was the perfect Dory story. The city of Seattle decided in their infinite wisdom, they said, hey, you know what would be a really good idea? What if we took this public toilet issue problem that they're having, that they're always having? Public toilets are always gross. People don't want to use them. They're always dirty. People do bad things in public toilets. And so what if we had public toilets that cleaned themselves? They were automated. They used technology to clean themselves. Now, I don't know how this would work, but what if we did this? So back in 2004, the city purchased high-tech public toilets. And the big sale of these things, the big selling point of these were they had sanitizing water jets, automatic doors that would clean themselves. And so in between uses for tourists, transients in Pioneer Square, Capitol Hill, the Seattle waterfront, Pike Place Market, and Chinatown International District, they installed five of these. In between uses, these toilets would clean themselves. And think of the money we're going to save on public toilets that no longer have to be cleaned by crews of people to clean these toilets. Because again, technology, they're automated. It's amazing. So how much did city spend on these toilets? They were $5 million toilets. Not for each one. That would have been ridiculous. But it's still ridiculous. It was $5 million for five toilets. $1 million a pop. Self-cleaning. I understand that. That's exciting. What they basically look like, in case you guys don't know, in case you didn't see these, didn't see them at the time. Imagine like a porta potty. You know those porta potties that are like wheelchair accessible, so they're extra big, and they're pretty. You know, they got a big wide open swinging door. Imagine that set up in. I think they had these in here. Where's the list here? Pioneer Square, Capitol Hill, the Central Waterfront, Pike Place Market, and Chinatown. In the International District. So they set up these five water toilets. And again, they're just, oh man, how cool this technology. They're sanitizing water jets. They have automatic doors, which again was a big selling point. I don't know why that's a big selling point. All the way back in 2004. So they install these. And what happens almost immediately? Well, the problem is they don't work. They have some weird mechanism that came out from behind the seat that was supposed to like drag itself over the surface of the seat, because as you know, when you go into these public toilets, a lot of times people, they don't have great aim. That's as gross as I want to get describing that. But the seats were often covered in things, which is disgusting. And so the city, the toilets had this like sanitary wipe that would come out and the technology was supposed to wipe the seat clean. And again, for $1 million, I would hope that it worked, but it didn't. It didn't work. It worked very poorly. And the other thing that happened, because again, they're kind of bigger and they had a fair amount of space in there. Well, you have some people that are living outdoors. Back in 2004, you called them homeless people. Now you call them unhoused. You had people that decided to set up camp inside these comfortable, super high-tech automated toilets. essentially you have a $1 million house that looks like a toilet that somebody is now moving into, and it just didn't work. The other thing that happened in these toilets is that they became, not only were they filthy, not only they became like dens of drug use, they were also used, unfortunately, as prostitution outlets. People were just posting up in there, running the oldest business out of these toilets. Again, $1 million a pop. You could buy, think of in 2004, think of the money that you could spend in 2004. Think of how much house that you could buy for $1 million in the city of Seattle. And houses generally have more than one bathroom. Just think of that. They spent $1 million a toilet. All right, so I've described to you the toilets now. This is a long time ago. This is so in 2008, the city says, all right, this didn't work. It became a drug den, filthy, disgusting. Technology didn't work, and it was being used for prostitution. So yeah, we got to shut these things down. So they yank them out. They spent $5 million on them. They yank them out. And then they put them up for sale on eBay with a, let's see, what was the minimum bid originally? The minimum bid for these toilets was $89,000. And everyone said, nah, it's not worth it. I'm not going to do it. In the second attempt to sell them on eBay, the city said, all right, let's offer no minimum and let's see who bids. So 148 bids were cast, and they ended up selling all five of them for $12,000. All five of them. So I don't know if you guys want to do that math in your head, but originally $5 million investment for an experimental futuristic technology, and they end up selling them at a pretty steep loss, I would say, for $12,000. Now, the city doesn't look at things like you and I look at things, because the city is nuts. And they don't care about money, because it's your money. It's not their money, but they're spending your money. And so here's what the city said at the time. I'm not going to name the spokesperson for the Seattle Public Utilities who spoke on this article, because I don't want to embarrass them. This comment has not aged well. And it wasn't a comment that went over well then. But this spokesperson said, we sold them for what the market determined to be worth, which again, $12,000. The city thought they were worth $5 million, but in reality, they sold on eBay for $12,549. And then asked, they said, like, what do you think about that loss? And they said, did we get hosed? I'm not sure. How ridiculous is that? Yes, you got hosed. If you buy something for $5 million and you sell it at a loss for $12,549, then yes, that is a loss. I can tell you. I'm not like a mathematician genius, but I can tell you that that's not a good investment of Seattleites' money. So when the state of Washington says they're now going to invest in paint drones that are going to paint the sides of overpasses, and they're going to paint, like, I'll believe it when I see it. They're going to spend a bunch of money doing this. I promise you, they're going to spend a bunch of money doing this. And what they're going to end up finding is, you know what? Maybe it's just better to, like, get out there, put a little sweat effort into it, and hire a guy with a roller and just go up and down the road and cover up this graffiti, which is probably what they'll end up doing eventually. But whatever. They can try it. It's fun to try new things. And you know what? It's really fun to fly these drones. So good luck to them. All right. We got a lot of stuff coming up on the show.
The Mariners Kids Club is 100% free and a great way to get your kids excited for a lifetime of Mariners baseball. Sign up online and your youngster will receive a Kids Club hat, access to early gate opportunities, discounts, and more. Go to mariners.com/kidsclub to join.
Dave Ross on Seattle's Morning News.
It was a traffic miracle, and what made this miracle possible was the presence of traffic officers, professionally trained human beings.
Weekdays 6 to 9, streaming live on your smart speaker. You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jake Skorheim, of course. Welcome to the show. And I have a very special guest with me. It's been a while since she's been on the show. Welcome back, Mickey Gomez.
Yay!
Cairo News Radio reporter, content creator, all that great stuff.
Yeah.
Welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
I know, it's been a while.
It has. I thought you didn't love me anymore.
No. A lot of love coming from me.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
But you have an interesting story. I jumped at this because I was like, oh yeah, I have a family.
Yeah.
I totally understand budgeting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have an interesting story that I don't know that I fully buy what these people are saying. So why don't you set it up for us, then we can chat about it.
Right. So it's on MyNorthwest.com. And according to a recent study by Smart Asset, financial advisors tell us that a single person in Seattle has to make about $120,000 to live comfortably here in the city. And if you are a working adult, married with two children.
Okay.
It takes about $284,000 to live comfortably. And that means that we are ninth in the nation when it comes to affordability and being able to live comfortably in a big city.
So there are only eight cities ahead of us where it is more expensive to live, just to live your normal life.
Yeah.
Not even like, they're not even saying like an extravagant life, just to survive in the city.
Right. New York City comes in at number one. San Jose is number two.
San Jose is surprising me, but I guess that makes, it's a nice area.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very nice. The Bay Area. Very nice. Santa Ana. Most of these places are California.
Yeah.
Boston, Massachusetts came in at number five.
They're all coastal.
You need like $319,000 to live comfortably there.
How much
there.
Is New York? Like, how much do you need in New York?
Yeah. In order to live in New York comfortably, you need to be making about $318,406 as a married couple with two children.
With two children. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're single, $138,000 to $140,000.
It's those kids that really they say
it's
get
those
you.
Doggone kids,
it's
man.
Doggone kids.
They're expensive.
So $280,000 for Seattle.
Yeah.
You and I were talking about this a little bit off the air, and I think that the important thing is, these are just estimates. They're not saying that, like, you know, this is a requirement. Mm-hmm. Because I think for anybody listening who is a normal person, most people hear those numbers and they go, oh, man, like, I'm really not stacking up. That's a lot of money.
That's a hefty you income.
A very, very high percent earner if you're making $280,000 a year.
Yeah.
But what you could do is you could also, there's other ways that you can live your life happily, making far less than that.
Yeah.
And save a ton of money. Like, one of the things you can do, the most obvious one, and this is one that I've chosen to do, I don't live in Seattle.
Yeah.
I commute into work.
I commute into work as well. I still live in King County, but we don't make what they're saying that you should make comfortably, but we're just under that.
Yeah.
And
but still you got to figure out what you're going
to And that's not my income, by the way. I'm married to a medical provider. She's got a great practice. Works her butt off, you know, and then you get my little income in there. And so that kind of bumps us up.
Every
but still,
bit, these days, every bit counts.
That's
every
right.
Every bit helps.
So I agree with you in that you don't necessarily have to live in Seattle proper. Like, if you are willing to make the commute and just live right outside of the city, you're going to find some more affordable housing.
I've had this discussion with a bunch of folks, but, you know, we've talked about this on the show before. Mm-hmm. This idea that you have to live in the city and it you know, that people want to be able to buy houses in the city. Mm-hmm. I understand the desire to want those things, but nobody's entitled to just have those things just because they want them.
Like, yeah.
I work in the city. It would be great to not have to commute, but I knew that if my wife and I, when we decided we wanted to buy a house, buying a house in Seattle at the time was not feasible for us.
Right.
And so back in 2020, we went, hey, you know what? We need to start looking somewhere else. Years ago, we moved out of the city. We moved out when we had our first kid because we were like, you know, we want more neighborhood experience.
Yeah.
We want, you know, parks where we feel a little bit more comfortable walking
you
the kids around.
We want space.
We want space. And if God willing, if we can get a yard, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And so we made that decision and then we moved up to Snohomish County. Never look back. We love it. We just like would never want to live anywhere else now. But it's very, very expensive to afford a house in Seattle.
Yeah, it is.
And so like, you know, for anybody who out there is listening, considering like, oh, I just can't possibly make it happen. Well, no, that's not true. And don't tell yourself that and don't undercut yourself because you can make it happen. You can get everything you want. It just may not be exactly as you're envisioning it.
You're absolutely right. When we were looking at a home, when we were looking at homes here in Seattle, I just kept throwing up in my mouth. And I know that that's a disgusting, you know, analogy, but that's literally what would happen every time I would go and see a home that would have everything that we were looking for. $1.2 million, $1.3 million, $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Oh, this is $1 million. It's a fixer upper. Give me a break. So then my real estate agent said, hey, let's go look at this city. It's still King County, you know, and it's incorporated King County. Let's go take a look. And I was like, nope, 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 nope. And finally, I looked and I went, oh, this checks off.
Isn't that a funny feeling?
Yes, it is. And it checked off everything that we were looking for.
Yeah.
Two car garage, backyard, four bedroom,
yep.
Three baths, open concept.
All the deck, things. All the things.
All the freaking things. $630,000.
That's pretty great. That's really great.
But I had to make some concessions. Sure. Now I have a 26-minute commute into work every morning.
But you know what? I drive 35 minutes in every day. And it's just a thing that I have to do. I add it into my day. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to do it because I like where I'm coming home and I'm living.
Yeah.
Like, I like my neighbors. I love my neighbors. I love the community that we're in. Mm-hmm. I love that I feel confident and safe, that my family is safe. Like, that's the reason that we moved out of Seattle originally.
And we feel safe too. Like, I, you know, it's really interesting. And I know that we have such a big homelessness crisis here in the city of Seattle. We've lived in Capitol Hill. We lived in Madrona, you know, so we've experienced Seattle life, and almost everywhere, all the little parks had people living in tents. So it made it very difficult for me to take my kids. Yeah, but in our neighborhood, none of that.
Yeah, me neither.
None of it. Yeah.
We were living across the street from Green Lake. We were renting a place, probably paying way too much in rent. And we were living across the street, and my wife would go and walk through the park when we had our first kid. And she would like, oh, got to watch out for needles.
Yeah.
And when you start like thinking in terms of like needles and things like that, you just like the decision, once you're a parent, like the decision becomes very, very easy to make. And then once we like moved out, like I feel like a preacher. Get out of town.
Like a representative.
I do. I feel like I just want to share this good news to people that they should go and discover some of these other great areas that we have. Don't think that you have to be downtown, paying downtown prices, living the way that people have to live downtown.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it. Like, there's a better life out there.
There's some amazing communities out there. Not only that, but local restaurants that don't charge the same amount that Seattle restaurants charge.
The prices that people pay here?
Yeah.
God, we're so simpatico.
Yeah, and what are the reasons why people, I mean, think about where people shop. They still go to some of those fancy grocery stores. We don't do that. I'm surprised those fancy grocery stores still exist.
How can they exist? How much money do these people have that they can spend $10 on a thing of eggs?
$5.99 for an apple.
That's insane.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I'm going to the Trader Joe. I'm buying a 69 cent gala.
Isn't it funny that we've reached this stage of our life where we're just like talking about the price of apples and eggs?
Right. But I'm just like, how are people? No. You don't have to live in the city of Seattle and pay those prices.
I know.
You move out.
Move out.
Not only that, you don't have to eat out all the time.
Don't eat out.
You could take transit.
City is for young people. Like, that's how I honestly feel. I lived in Seattle for 10 years when I was young and before I had kids. And then once I grew up and I became an adult, and I wanted to start gaining some wealth.
Yeah.
I wanted to quit giving my money to the city because it's expensive. And I said, you know what? I want to have money someday. I'm going to go somewhere where I can hold on to some of that money.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And I'm so glad that I did.
So what are some of the communities that you think are more affordable than Seattle? I mean, I know you live up in Snohomish.
I live up in Snohomish, which I love. Mm-hmm. A ton of people are moving up to like the Marysville area.
Yeah.
Down south. There's so many of our listeners. Like a vast number of our listeners live down in the Tacoma area. There's a bunch of great little neighborhoods.
There's Normandy Park, which is where I live. Federal Way is really building up. I mean, and hopefully next year they're going to have the train ready.
The East Side's really expensive, but it rivals Seattle for price. So like if you can find a place there, God bless you, but it is really expensive. But it does have those neighborhood things that you and I were just talking about where you feel very confident that you're not going to have to run into things that you don't want your kids to run into.
They're building up new apartments up north, Linwood, like when that Linwood exchange.
Linwood's exploding.
So you could take the train once that's completed, which I know they're already practicing. You know, if you're driving on I-5 northbound and you're like, what? Yeah, is the train open? You can see them practicing.
There.
And once that light rail opens up to Linwood, I mean, man.
I know. It's going
to
be.
Can you imagine the affordability you're going to get living in Linwood, able to take the train?
Tell you what, Linwood prices have already started skyrocketing because people know that the train's coming. And so like anywhere within 3 miles of those train stations.
Right. But that's what happens.
That's what happens. But whatever. That's fine.
People do you believe the numbers, though, Jake?
$280,000 to live comfortably in Seattle?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe those numbers. Yeah. I don't think you need that.
How much do you think you need?
I think probably you could live comfortably in Seattle for like, you know, $150,000, $160,000. I think you could cut $100,000 off of that number.
I'm part of a mom's group that lives here in Seattle, and there are a lot of moms in that group that talk about how they make about 150, 175, family of four.
Doing good.
And they make it work.
Yeah.
They make it work.
That's the important thing everybody who has a family understands. You just make it work. Wherever you're at, you figure it out. And so these numbers, These are cuckoo numbers. I don't like these numbers.
I want to know what the person or what the organization means by living comfortably. Like, what does that mean? Going to concerts? Does that mean like,
I think it means shopping at those three-letter grocery stores we were just talking about.
Yeah.
I think it means going out to eat at nice restaurants. I don't think it means saving any money. I don't think that's what it means, that's where I'm at right now. I'm like, I just don't want to waste my money. The phase I'm at. I hate wasting money.
I do too.
I wasted so much of it when I was young. And now I'm just like, I'm just going to scoop up as much as I can.
And you know what? My son was really smart. He was like, ooh, I want to download this TV app and I want to be able to watch shows on this TV app. And he looked at it. And he goes, Mom, it's $79 a month. He goes, he goes, 80 with tax. He times that by 12. Yeah. It's over $600 a year.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't need that. I'm yes.
That's over $900 a year.
Right. So I was like, you're right, son. So are you going to get the app? And he goes, no.
Good for him.
Good for you. That's what I said. I'm like, you're learning how to save already.
I love it. All right, Mickey Gomez, thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right, we got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
Choke Points with Chris Sullivan.
I am not a huge fan of left lane camping. Washington State Trooper Rick Johnson says,
unless you're past another vehicle, you're not to be in the furthest left general purpose lane of a multiple lane interstate.
Tuesdays and Thursdays on Seattle's Morning News.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I don't know if you guys heard this. I played a little bit of this yesterday, but I found this really funny. I just think he's a funny guy. You may not agree with him politically, but James Carville, he tells it like it is, and he's an old school guy, which I like. And what I like, too, is like he's a guy who doesn't care which side you vote. He's a guy who believes there's a documentary out right now that he's a part of, and it's talking about he was asked about politics back in the day. Like, what was politics like back in the day? And he basically says, like, politics used to be fun. In fact, they asked him, like, if you could name the title of this documentary about you, what would you call it? And he says, when politics was fun. He says there was actually a time when people loved doing this. People would go out, they would drink, they would talk to everybody, they'd leak stories. Generally, when it was over, you'd go and sit with the other side and you'd have drinks together. Now, this is obviously true. This happened in his real life. He married James Carville was, in case you don't know, James Carville, he's 79 years old now, but he's quite spry still. He seems 79 years young. So he was the mastermind behind Bill Clinton's campaign in 1992. And he was basically competing against Mary Matlin, who was advising the George H.W. Bush campaign. And the two of them fell in love because they both love politics and they love talking. And, you know, he's a liberal, she is a conservative, and they made it work, and they've been married forever. And he says that's the way it should be. We shouldn't be sitting here fighting with people on the other side. You can have healthy disagreements with somebody on the other side, and you could still even have a happy marriage with those folks. But, okay, so why are we talking about James Carville? He was talking in this documentary, and I thought this was very interesting. And so I just thought this was a funny turn of phrase as well. He was talking about Biden's poll numbers. Biden's poll numbers are not great. People are saying that, you know, Biden needs to figure something out because it's not looking great for him right now. And James Carville said, listen, these are really, really bad poll numbers. How bad are they? They're this bad.
I don't think people really appreciate how bad Biden's poll numbers are. When you look at them, it's like walking down your grandmother naked. You can't unsee it, no matter how hard you try. And the deeper you dig, the kind of worse it is. I don't think we thought this thing through. I don't think people realize the hunger and appetite for something different in this country. And I don't think they realize this terrific pool of candidates out of there.
All right. In this Carville documentary, he's talking with Rob Reiner, you know, the director, Spinal Tap. So Rob Reiner was asking Carville, he was saying, like, listen, you may not like Biden, you may think his poll numbers are bad, but if he's the guy, everybody should get behind him. And Carville says, all right, I understand that, but it's really tough to think about that given what he's seen.
I don't disagree with you that we have a good bench. There are a lot of great candidates out there for 2028, but I think we can still win this election. But we have to all be pulling with the same oar.
And I understand where you're coming from. People that I love, that I talk to every day, that are part of this film, make exactly the same point you do. And I can't unsee what I see.
He just can't unsee what he's seeing. All right, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But he's a funny guy. I like listening to him. All right. I hope you guys have had a good night. I've had a blast. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Thank you to all of our guests. What a fun, great show. We're already working on a great show for you tomorrow, so make sure you tune in for that. But for right now, I gotta go. It's late. Night-night.